Welcome back. I'm Gary Parr.
And I'm Christine Williams.
And it's the midweek show of Fiber Talk. We play with needles.
Yes. And sometimes we even work with them.
It has been known to happen. Known to happen. So, Vonna Pfeiffer, the Twisted Stitcher, two-time guest on the Fiber Talk thing here, posted a video about how to finish a shepherd's bush stocking. Well, that's, you know, that's what I'm stitching for our grandson, Cooper.
Right.
So she had me. So I wanted to see this happen. It's an hour and 15 minutes. She said at the end that her head was about to explode. I can't even imagine taking, you know, explaining every single step in, you know, complete detail for an hour and 15 minutes.
Yeah.
For how to do something that she, I'm sure, just could have knocked out in an hour. And, but holy smokes, it's involved. I mean, when you get done, you can do it. But what I took out of it is when someone says it costs X dollars to take your needlework and make it into a stocking, just shut up and pay them. Because
yeah, pretty much. Well, and it's a totally different skill set too, because it's machine sewing. It's all, you know, it's a completely different. You have to be almost a seamstress, so that's a very different set of skills from needlepoint, right?
Yeah.
Even just knowing how to operate a sewing machine competently is one thing, but then essentially when you're working with piping and backing fabrics and all those things, then you're essentially becoming an upholsterer, because that's really upholstery style techniques there, you know, when you're working with those things. And if you're going to use piping, that's self-piping, you know, with the fabrics that you choose as opposed to ready-made, then it gets into a whole different level of stitchery that is completely different than, you know, it's like asking somebody to knit the back of your stocking for you.
Right.
If you haven't done it before, if you haven't constructed things that way, it can be a bit challenging. So yes, I feel the same way. And it's the same thing with the framing. You know, that's one of the things that I've been looking at too now is getting pieces framed. And one of the things that we were told was don't bring it to a framer, bring it to a needle workshop to have it framed because they know how to do it. Give it to somebody who knows what to do with that, because if you don't block, the fabrics are weird. If you don't know what you're doing, and the last thing you want to do is take something you've invested 90 hours into and just, you know, do a sloppy job, and then that's all anybody will ever see.
Right. Yeah, I'd never piping, you know, I thought you just bought that stuff, and she shows how to make it out of the same cloth that she used for the background. That was pretty neat to see in its own right.
Right.
Yeah.
Yep. But even that, I mean, it's something you'd never think about, but you want to not cut it on, you know, with the grain of the cloth, you want to cut it diagonally to get it to bend the right way, right? So it's
right.
Like little things, if you've never done it before, you would never think about that. So yeah, there's definitely skill and experience that goes into what she does. So if there's a cost associated with it, now you know why. It's not only the experience, but it's not a slow process. There's a lot of steps involved in doing it.
Oh yeah, that was the other part is, I mean, I knew that you had to sew the backing, you know, the good side to the good side, and then you turned it inside out. But just getting to the point where you could do that and not have it come out all wrinkled and puckered and
and
crinkled. And of course she made a liner for it. And I expected she would attach the liner to the needlework, but she actually made an inside sock. So that was a surprise to me, but it was, I was fascinated by it, but ain't no way I'm doing it. That's just not happening.
It's different. I think I'll probably try my hand at it because I have a bit of experience with, you know, sewing machine type things and upholstery and things like that, like probably more than I have, well, definitely more than I have needlepoint. So, when it comes time to do that sort of thing, I think, in fact, I'm going to start a crewel work pillow soon, in my stack of 14 other things that I'm going to do. But that one, I'll probably do the upholstery on that myself. And that'll be fun because I haven't done that in a while.
Yeah.
But yeah, it has to be done very carefully because it's not difficult to do, but it's also very easy to do poorly, if that makes sense.
Oh, I think that's exactly it. Yeah, because each of those steps, well, I could do that. Well, I could do that.
And then
I stood back at the end. Wait a minute, could I do that and have it come out perfect? Probably not.
Yeah. Right. And so the thing with piping, right, is using the special type of foot for the sewing machine you have to use to do the piping. And then what I found the key with that is to have to go really slowly because you're stitching together the layer of the piping. So the whatever you're using as the piping filling, the thread or the yarn or twine sometimes, then those two layers of fabric that's around that plus whatever you're stitching it to. And if you don't get that foot right up against that piping filling, it just comes out wobbly and weird looking. So that's the key there, is just to go really, really slowly and make sure that everything is lined up perfectly. And if you get that part right, and it's worth practicing if you ever want to do it, practice on some scrap fabric first, getting that foot right up against that piping, so that you can get it to line up well. Because that's really what makes a finished piece look crisp, I think, is that exact thing. It's not having wrinkles. It's having things lined up well, having everything tight. To me, that's what makes a finished piece look really spectacular. Because that's the thing. You don't notice it when it's done well, but then when it's done poorly, you notice it a lot.
You know, isn't that the truth? Isn't that the absolute truth right there? Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. Done poorly, oh man, it sticks out like a sore thumb. Yep.
Absolutely.
Yeah, so go to Vanna's, well, she has a whole bunch of videos on how to do all this finishing stuff. I mean, she doesn't hide a thing, but this is her most recent one, and it's eye-opening. unless you're talented with a sewing machine, you'll just gladly pay someone. Uh-huh. Here, Vanna, you do it.
Yeah.
So that was, that's a good video to watch. It really is educational, and So speaking of Shepherd's Bush stockings, you say that five times fast.
No, thank you.
I've been working on grandson Cooper's stocking, and then decided that I could get a second one done for grandson Connor, who is all of 6 weeks old. So mm-hmm. I went and bought another chart and the threads. So now I've put the pressure on. The one thing I really hate is putting pressure on needlework, you know, to get something done. But I'm going to try and get them both done by Christmas and done in enough time to finish them. So we'll see.
And isn't this the one that it took you 47 years to do the first one?
Oh, no, that was for our son, Kevin. No, that was.
Oh, okay. Yeah. All right, good.
And it wasn't 47. It was only like 28.
okay. Well, you know, 47, 28 is fine. You know, it's all the same thing.
So I'm working on Cooper stocking, and you get it down to the bottom. I'm down to the bottom, and there's the train down there. Okay? Now, I'm really picky about counting. I double and triple count to make sure, and this train is separate from everything that's been stitched previously. So, you know, you make sure you really count carefully. I have no idea what I did. No idea. Other than I was stitching and watching TV, and that's, you know, there you go. So I get half the train done. I'm looking at this past weekend. I'm looking at finishing up the entire stocking. I mean, I'm in the home stretch. half the train's done. I've got, two cars and then four hearts and I'm out. Okay, so, I mean, we're looking at maybe 4 or 5 hours tops. I don't know what made me look, but I looked in the middle of one of the cars to see where, just look to see where it was in relation to what had been stitched above. I was off to the left by a full inch.
Ooh, how did that happen?
Exactly. I have no idea. No idea. So select words were said, and... And then, of course, I'd stitch, and this train is, I mean, it's a lot of solid stitching. So it took me the better part of two evenings just to pull out all the threads.
Oh.
Because it had to come out because it was so far off the edge that the cowcatcher on the train was going to be right up against the edge of the toe of the stocking. I mean, it had to come out. And mm-hmm. So remove the whole thing, and then now the engine and the tender, the coal car, are in, but you know, this should have been done. And so now, you know, this setback, So frustrating. And what's frustrating is just simply because I made a mistake counting, or counted and then looked up at something on TV and then came back to the wrong spot. I don't know, but so that's, yeah, I mean, that's just part of stitching, but it sure was, I was almost done. You know, if it was early on, I said, nah, no big deal, but I was almost done.
That's the worst.
Yeah. Yep. But so I got that, and then another one right behind it to do. But they go fast. They're great stocking because they go fast. I mean, you're stitching on, they call it linen, but I mean, it's basically burlap.
Right. You know, it's a big stitches.
Yeah. So, and it's just, you know, just cross stitches with number 5 pearl cotton. And
my favorite.
It really does. And it's not, the designs are not dense. So it goes fast, and they make up really nice stockings. So, mm-hmm. Yeah, it's going to be really nice when it's done, but geez, you got to count. You just got to count right. What an idiot. Yeah.
Well, those things happen. You know, what are you going to do? That's part of the game, isn't it?
Yep. It is that.
You get good at ripping out.
Oh yeah. And my next purchase is going to be a seam ripper.
Yeah. I do not have that.
Well, that's what Marga said. You don't have that? Well, no, I don't.
No.
So it was a lot of clipping with scissors and being careful not to clip the ground cloth. And
mm-hmm. Yeah, you do have to be careful with the seam ripper, too, for the same reason, because I've done that, and not on needlepoint, but just in tailoring and things like that, where you go to rip out a seam and you accidentally, because the point of it is very sharp. So if you're trying to go down a hem or a seam of something and you rip through and suddenly ripping in the fabric itself. So be very, very careful when you do that. That point is super, super sharp, and it will easily jump into the fabric if you're not careful. So.
All right. I'll put that down in my list of tips.
Make sure you keep that tip up in the air where you can see it, so that it doesn't rip down. Because that's the last thing you want, is if you're already ripping stitches out and you're angry and frustrated, is to point that tip down and then actually tear your ground cloth. And that's not going to be a happy day.
Yeah, and I think you said an important point there, and I did do it when I realized the problem. I walked away.
Yes.
I got it, because I was really upset. I mean, thing was done. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I thought, no, don't make it worse by, you know, being upset and try cutting threads out and then snag that ground cloth, and then you've got a bigger problem. So.
Right. Because then how do you, I don't even know how, I don't want to think about how to fix that.
There are ways, but I don't want to explore them.
No.
No. Not interested. So. Yeah, so there, you know, just standard old count, double check, triple check, and then don't watch TV. So, yeah, so those first few stitches of the engine the second time, then we had another counting session just to make sure it was exactly where it belonged. Yes. Mm-hmm. Yep. Interesting. On Needlepoint Nation, Nancy Powell posted a thing. I've decided my new favorite stranded threads are any of the ones that give number of strand suggestions for different canvas counts. I'm going to try 4 of Gloriana on my 18-count canvas, and then note to self, 4 strands of Gloriana next to 2 of Bermelana is 1 too many. And, you know, that question comes up all the time. How many strands of whatever should I use? And Jane Wood... Now, here we go. And before I do this, Jane, you know, she added to the name, and then she sent out a press release a couple days later because she realized that the new name wasn't complete enough, so now she's added more. So buckle up. I got to get this in so it's official, and then I'll tell you she offered some good advice. So here we go. Deep breath. Jane Wood's Chili Hollow Needlepoint Adventure, Thread Emporium, and place of many links to interesting internet things that you should read. Okay, that's the new name now, according to the press release that she sent out. Yeah.
Now I know what it is. I think that's a perfect name.
Well, that's why she wanted those extra words, was to complete it. I mean, it said right in the press release. And I think now it's I think it's complete. I think she's really told what she does with this thing.
Yes.
Yeah. So, you know, applause to her for that. I mean, it's great. So anyway, she did the thing, and I'm starting to do this more, and I don't, it's a weird mentality. But anyway, she said, do test stitches. This is in response to Nancy Powell, who we were talking about a half hour ago before we had to read her entire blog name. Do test stitches in the margins. The number of plies you need vary according to the stitch, the brand of thread, the count of the canvas, your stitch tension, and the phases of the moon. She says, well, just kidding about the last one, but many I use varies. So, but she makes the good point to do the practice and, you know, to have a little practice canvas on the side to do testing. And I don't know what that mentality is that, you get a piece, a chart, or whatever, and then you don't think you can practice on something else before you stitch. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so you feel this pressure to do it perfectly right on the canvas, and there's nothing that prevents you from having another little scrap of canvas on the side and practicing and determining. And Jane makes a really good point, you know, do it in the margins, but don't, you know, because doing it in the actual live area, if you have to tear it out two or three times, your canvas starts to get a little wonky. And so I just thought it was a really good point to do that. And I've been kind of keeping that in mind as I have doubts on something. I've been more and more going and practicing on pieces of canvas that got trimmed off or I have a small roll of canvas that I cut pieces out of to do different projects. And then you always have a little extra on the side. So I'll just snip that off and use that as a practice piece. And
I think, yeah, that's really smart, actually. It's just to take the trim off the edge, because you can use the edge of the canvas, but if it's not in a hoop or something or on a stretcher bar, then you're not going to get the tension, and then it's not going to be a true replicate of what you would get on your actual piece. So trimming a little bit off, just enough to do, you know, a few stitches is not a terrible idea. I like that idea the best, actually.
Yeah, so Jane, the all-wise Jane, no, that's, I mean, it's just good. Just practice on the side, and especially, and that's the thing with any of these threads, but silks, and I think silks in particular, is your tension, the stitch, you know, if you're doing vertical stitches, sometimes that requires an extra strand to make coverage, proper coverage. Diagonal stitches, not so much. Practice with it. See, get the look you want. And, you know, maybe your tension is much tighter than the designer's, and so you need an extra strand, or maybe you're looser and you don't need as much. And, it's worth the practice. So I thought that was good advice from Jane Wood there, in response to Nancy Powell. And yeah, just do it on the side. No harm in, you know, worst is use up a little bit of thread. No big deal.
Yeah. Well, and, you know, so maybe that's the other thing, too, is to consider that, especially if you're working from something that's been kitted for you, is if you have a piece that you're working and you need to do a practice stitch, go get some spare thread of the same type, but it doesn't need to be the same color. It could be from an old project or something else. So if you're using, you know, number 5 pearl cotton, don't use the pearl cotton you're using for the project. Just pick the same pearl cotton, if you happen to have it, in just whatever color. And then work it that way. And that way you don't have to worry about using up the fab, you know, the threads that you slated for that project.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. Like I inherited a bunch of anchor threads, and there's one color that I just find vile. I'd never use.
But that's a good one for that.
Right. Well, that's exactly what it is. Yeah. I have a bobbin full of it. And so for that kind of thing, but I also use that, the primary use for that bobbin of thread is to find the centers of canvases and the top edges.
Yes. Right.
So I make an X, and then I just throw it away, and I don't care. It's a big long length of thread. I don't care because I inherited it, and I hate the color. And so it's just a useful tool. But yeah, that's my center canvas finding thread. Yep, all the time. So that was good. And then, we just got news from Jane also, that our friends Tess and Thorne have decided to separate their company into two companies.
Right.
So, yeah, so sorry to hear that, but maybe it's a good thing. I don't know.
I think it's kind of exciting. So it'll be interesting to see how the designs divide up between the two of them. And now you've got, you know, two people that have been working together, but they each have a slightly different aesthetic and different design sense. So, you know, now we'll have two different companies to see how they evolve differently. So I think it's going to be kind of fun.
Yeah. So best of luck to both of them. Hope it works out. Yeah. Learn something. There was a discussion on, I think it was on Needlepoint Nation, about basically the question about putting canvas on stretcher bars and how many tacks to use. And because that question has come up, though I've not seen a discussion that evolved as quite as much as this one did, but also the question of whether to stitch in the well or on top of your stretcher bars. And that's a personal preference where you put the canvas on top of the bar and stitch that way, or some people like to put it on effectively the bottom of the stretcher bars and stitch down into, because their belief is two things, that it keeps your hands on the stretcher bars and off the canvas. But also by having it on the bottom, and I'm using bottom in quotes, on the bottom of stretcher bars, that it's easier to finish off threads because you don't have your needle on, if you're on the edges, you don't have your needle running into the stretcher bar wood. And so some people prefer that. I've tried it both ways, and I'm not sure I care either way, but I generally just do it on the top and deal with finishing the threads. But anyway, so that question comes up. But then this one was about tacks, and I didn't write down who started the thing, but how many tacks to put in. And I use a lot of tacks, but Debbie Rowley posted in this discussion that she was taught, and apparently that's what she does, that basically she uses a ton of tacks and puts them effectively one right next to the other all the way around.
Ah, okay.
And of course, the thinking is the more tacks, the less your canvas is going to shift, which is, you know, that's just common sense.
Right.
But, so I don't put them, and what Debbie said that she had talked to, I think, a framer who said that they should never be more than a half an inch apart.
More than half an inch. Okay.
More than half. So a half an inch or less. And I would say, I looked at mine on what I'm working on. I'd say I'm about a quarter inch apart all the way around.
Oh, yeah. So I didn't do that well because, and it's funny, we were just talking about this. I had said, you know, I had had a couple of them fall out. And so I lost tension on them having to go back and re-tack the canvas to the stretcher bars. And I don't know what instructions I was following on how many tacks to use, but it's way less than that. Like, I have quite a distance between tacks, and the tension was still good, but I'm finding if one tack happens to fall out because I've been moving the canvas around or something, then I lose tension. So each tack that in mine is critical. And so if you lose one, you're kind of in trouble. So yeah, I clearly use way too few.
I'm concerned that your tacks are falling out. Are you using regular thumb tacks, or are you using needlework tacks?
No, needlework tacks, and I think I probably just didn't put them in tightly enough.
Oh, okay, because, yeah, they shouldn't fall out. Usually getting them out is the job.
Right, and that's what I thought, too, and I was surprised that a couple of them had worked their way loose, and I think it was just that maybe those couple I were the first ones that I had done, and so I was a little tentative about it. You know, when you're first, we do this all the time, any new hobby, or you're very, you know, tentative and delicate with things at the beginning. And then you realize that, okay, that's not going to get ruined if I do this. So, you know, like we talked about using larger needles to spread the threads on canvas. You know, I realize now I could have hammered those things in quite a bit more than I did. And it would have been more than fine to do so.
Yeah. Cause they should go all the way down. Cause the head.
Yeah.
The head will help hold the canvas,
maybe
even more than the post of the tack, that, you know, the head right down on the canvas. Yeah.
Yes. And that makes a ton of sense to me now. So now that I know that.
It's interesting. I found it interesting because now I will add more tacks the next time I set one up, because
me too.
When I put one on, I'll put it, I start with four anchor tacks, so I'll have top center, bottom center, roughly, where I'll pull that semi tight, and then I'll go to the sides and do the same thing, center left and center right, and pull that even a little tighter, And that at least gets my canvas on the stretcher bars. And then I have a little square that I put on there to make sure that the canvas is square. So to eliminate as much blocking as possible at the, you know, when I'm finished with the thing.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll make sure it's square, and then I'll adjust from there. And I'm using, I think it was Curdy Biggs that told us about putting metal brackets on her,
yes,
on her stretcher bars. And I do that. All mine have it now. So I know the stretcher bar is square because it's not moving. And so then if I get the canvas on there square, then I know that when I'm done, I've got a really good chance that blocking may not even be required.
Mm-hmm.
But so I make it square. And then it's a tedious process. But I work from those center tacks out, going all the way around. So, like, I'll put a tack next to the top center one, either side, but I'll pull the canvas quite tight. And then I'll go to the bottom center on the opposite side and put a tack. So I'm always working, stretching the canvas opposites as much as possible. And then I just work my way around the canvas, side to side, top to bottom, and then I keep working from the center out all the way around. It takes a little bit of monkeying around, but then when I get done, if that canvas is square, then I know it's not moving throughout the whole stitching process, and it should. And usually by doing that and pulling hard, it'll be drum tight, and so then I just don't have to worry about it. It gets a little flex as you stitch, but I never feel like it's enough that it matters.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a pain in the butt. I mean, it takes more time, but I've never regretted it, because when I'm done, then it's square, it's finished, and throughout the whole process, the canvas stays where it's at. And yeah, and I push those down. And of course, usually in those boxes is a little blue lever tool.
Yes.
Yeah, that you can take the tacks out. But my next purchase is going to be, there's a set of wood handled tools.
Mm-hmm.
One is for hammering them down, which I just push them in. I don't hammer them down, and then the other is that pulling tool with a decent sized handle on it, so you can really get some leverage. And that's how I do it, so that it gets the canvas is mounted properly, and then square, and then I go, yeah.
And those are good infrastructure tools, because those are things that are going to be reused again and again.
Right. Yeah. But now I will be doing even more. I'll be putting tacks one right next to the other. Just that little extra.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm definitely in favor of that. I like that idea.
But yeah, I've seen people with a 12-inch stretcher bars where they've got maybe half dozen tacks on each side, and that's not going to hold it. That's not enough.
Mm-mm.
So no, especially if you're, you know, and that's the other thing, like you say, you've been traveling with yours a little bit, and that puts some stresses on it, and whether you like it or not, you know, putting them in bags and hauling them out and that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And you get a little pressure on the canvas, and it stretches a little bit, and so I wish there was a I often think if there was a plastic box that would hold your needlework, but it just, I'm sure there
it's
are.
It's too,
you know,
big. Right. And so I've been using the pillowcase method that Nicola had talked about, Parkman.
Yes.
And I think I like it and I don't like it. So I've been using like a silk satin pillowcase. And even that, I feel like every time I put the work in and take it out, it's rubbing. And so maybe I'm being a little too delicate with it, but this is the piece that I'm working on, is the Debbie Raleigh Diamond Delight. So it's got a lot of the man-made fibers and things that fray easily. So I don't like the idea of putting it in something and taking it out again every day, because it feels like it's brushing to me. And I could be, I mean, that's completely my own perception. It doesn't mean it's reality in any way. So I think that if I were keeping this piece in one place, I would just, I think I would prefer to just leave it stacked or leaned up against something that I'm in, a place that I knew was safe, rather than putting it into and taking it out of a bag every time. Unless I was going to leave it for, you know, some time, or had to leave it in a place where I thought it might be, you know, subject to animals and children and things of that nature. So,
yeah.
I think it's just a personal preference sort of thing. And I think it also depends on the piece. The other thing, actually, now that we mention it, because we were just talking about whether you put your stretcher bars on front ways or reverse. If you were to put the stretcher bars in the reverse way, where the canvas is stretched across the bottom, like you said, and the bars themselves are sitting up top, then you could put it in a bag and take it out, and you wouldn't have the surface abraded by whatever bag you're putting it in. So that said, I think the next one that I put on bars, I might actually do the opposite way. Or I think the next thing that I'm working on is actually a smaller piece that I'll probably just put in a hoop. And I might actually try it in the hoop backwards, which I've never done before. So it's really, it's going to feel really weird to do so. Because you just get used to doing something in a certain way. But I think I might do it just for that reason, because that way the work itself, if you slip it in and out of a bag, is protected by that distance that the hoop is giving you.
Right.
So
well, that's,
I might give
yeah.
that a try.
And that's another aspect of the argument that people who stitch in the well will make is exactly that. And I have to say that I followed Nicola's advice with my Millennium scroll thing and this stocking. And I always scrolled with it on top, and now I scroll with it on underneath.
Mm-hmm.
And it really is good advice, because on a piece like that that's long and that your hands are on it all the time, it keeps your hands off of that ground cloth and off of the stitching.
Mm-hmm.
And then any time you touch the canvas, it's always going to be the back side because of the way it's rolled.
So I saw an interesting thing the other day too, and this was I'm trying to think of where I saw this. It might have been in the instructions for a piece, or I forget where it was, but here was the piece of advice. When you're working in, on a piece that's, let's say a printed canvas, either a painted canvas or something that's printed so you can do embroidery on it. I think that's what it was. I do a lot of noodling around on the internet looking at different embroidery techniques that are interesting to me. So it was some surface embroidery technique where the pattern is basically just outlined on the fabric for you and then you stitch over it. The instructions were, when you set up your embroidery in your hoop, to do so with a layer of saran wrap. Oh, it was Mary Corbett. I'm pretty sure that's what it was. Mary Corbett with one T. And the point she was making was that saran wrap sticks to her more than it sticks to anything else. Which is, of course, the problem with saran wrap, that's true for everyone. But what the advice was to set up your hoop with your cloth that you're going to stitch on, and then a layer of saran wrap over that, and then you put your hoop on, and then you just tear away the saran wrap in the area that you're stitching. And the point of that is so that when you're leaning your hand on your fabric, you're not exposing the fabric to oils from your hand or whatever it is that you're doing, and just environmental dirt and things like that. I thought that was kind of a clever idea, and I've never done that before, but I might try it, especially for something that has a lot of open area. So with needlepoint, like the things that we've been talking about in counted pieces, you're stitching over most of the canvas, so there's not much exposed that you're going to see later where your hand was. But for things like, embroidery on cloth or stump work or things like that, where you do have large expanses of usually pale colored fabric, it's so easy for that to just become discolored from the resting your hand there.
Right. Mm-hmm.
That makes a ton of sense to me, and I think I might try that.
Yeah, I'd not seen the saran wrap one. I've seen other versions with cloth where
cloth I think cloth would probably be more comfortable to work with, but the saran wrap benefit is that you can see through it, so you can
right.
see where you're going and what you're going to do.
Yeah, I can see that plus. Yeah,
right.
See, that's a big part of why I start at the top left.
Mm-hmm.
is
so
as I
stitch
work
over.
Yeah, as I work my way down, what I've finished doesn't ever get touched again.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. But if you're working on a piece of fabric that's going to be a lot of white space.
Yes.
Then no matter what you do. And I think that's been one of the little things from the Royal School of Needlework back from way before we even started doing this, when they were talking about, when I was reading about how they were doing lace for wedding dresses. They had all of the embroiderers and the lace makers wearing white cotton gloves.
and they had to change their gloves every half hour.
Oh, man.
Yeah, because, and for that exact reason, because you needed to keep it clean. So any kind of sweat, any dirt that would accumulate, you take off your gloves, you put on new gloves, you know, and then you can continue. So I think that might be something I try at some point, is also trying cotton gloves. I don't know. It might drive me crazy to do so. And to stitch in any other kind of glove, I think would be kind of yucky. You know, I've worn like lab type gloves for years doing lab work and things that I do. But to stitch in those kind of gloves, I think would be not pleasant, because they're intentionally, have a little bit of a texture to them. Things, you know, they're meant to be grippy. So to have something that thread doesn't slide over easily wouldn't be so good, but cotton gloves might not be terrible. So I think, you know, now that I've sort of stitched a piece, and so you're talking about beginner things. Now that I've worked through this long piece and I've been working on it for quite some time, you know, you look at it first and you say, oh, it'll be fine. It won't get dirty. And it's almost inevitable that your hands are just, you know, no matter how many times you wipe them, you clean them. I keep handy wipes near the needlework now all the time. They travel with me. There's always something, even hand lotion, any kind of moisture, you know, then even if your hand is clean, then that moisture is on the canvas, and then the canvas picks up dirt from the air and all those sorts of things. So now I'm looking at the piece at the end, and especially after talking to Vanna and how she was saying how so many people send pieces dirty, I can see how that happens. It's starting to become clear to me why that's an issue. So now I'm starting to look at things. So the saran wrap thing, I might try it, because I think it would be good. But I think maybe because saran wrap does stick to hands really, really well, it would almost make sense to do the saran wrap and then a gloved hand, so that your hand glides over the saran wrap and doesn't stick. Right.
Yeah. I'm not sure I could stitch with gloves on. I don't know about that.
Yeah, I think it's one of those things, like getting used to wearing lab glasses is really hard too, until you do it because you have to, and then you get used to it, and then you don't even notice they're there. So yeah. I'm wondering if it wouldn't be one of those things that at first is very weird, but then after a while becomes, you know, something you don't notice any longer. I don't know. These are all things that I look at and say, you know, I'd like to try that to see if it's awful.
Right.
Because if it's not, it would certainly be a nice thing to do.
Cotton gloves are cheap to play with, so.
Yeah.
Now, see, I make good use when Marga's dad was one of those guys who used the cloth handkerchief in his pocket all the time.
Yes.
A practice I've just never understood, because the last thing I want is snot in my pocket. But, you know, but when he died, we inherited a whole stack of those cotton handkerchiefs.
Ah.
And so I have two of them that I use, and one I use to cover the basket that I keep my threads in for a project to keep light and dust off the threads. And then the other one I use to cover the project that I'm working on.
That is a smart idea.
That's on, it's on the stand. You know, it's on the stand. And so when I'm done, I'll put that over the top of it to keep crud off of it. And I also use that if I'm stitching and my hand is going to touch canvas, then I will put that down over the canvas where I'm going to touch, much like the saran wrap.
And
use that. That keeps my hands off it. But the saran wrap is intriguing for the very thing you said, that you can see what is going on underneath it. So that, that interests me. Yeah.
Well, and so now what strikes me as maybe a good compromise with the whole glove idea is fingerless gloves. So either taking cotton gloves and cutting the fingers off, so you have all the dexterity and the ability to touch things with the tips of your fingers, but now the sides of your hands and the large surfaces of your hands are covered, so now they're not sticking to saran wrap, they're not transferring dirt from place to place.
Yep.
And there are plenty, actually, and this might not even be a terrible idea either, for people who have, you know, carpal tunnel syndrome or other hand issues and arthritis and things, there are fingerless gloves made for that specifically. So they're elastic and they're like compression gloves. And I wonder if that wouldn't be kind of a comfortable thing to wear too, just because it's giving your hand a little bit of support. I don't know. Again, that could go either way. It could be terrible or it could be great. but either way, it's an already fingerless glove that's meant for that sort of thing. So
that might be something worth trying as well.
Yeah. Well, and that whole ergonomic thing, I gotta find a ergonomic expert to talk about needlework ergonomics, because that's been...
Yeah, I agree.
Because, see, and the reason it's been on my mind and is on my mind is I use an office chair, and mm-hmm. I stitch two-handed, you know, one under, one above. And what I have done is the armrests in the office chair are now at two different heights.
Ah, right. So you can have one hand, so you can rest an elbow for the below and an elbow for the above.
Because in the computer world, ergonomic desk sitting, the standard practice is, and the smart thing is, it, carpal tunnel and wrist problems, they come from the fact that your forearm is not supported.
Yes.
If your forearm is supported, then your wrist is not bearing the weight of your arm and the work, and you won't develop. I mean, you may develop problems, but you're not as likely to. And mm-hmm. so I'm using that same practice with this office chair, in that I'm supporting my forearms with those chair arms, so that the wrists and hands can work freely without bearing any weight or being under any tension. And one night I thought, I'm going to move this armrest down a notch and see if that helps. And by golly, I think it did. I mean,
that makes a lot of sense.
You can't do that in the recliner, but you can certainly do it in an office chair. So I think that helped. But I think the ergonomics, because you read all the time about people having shoulder problems and wrist problems and elbow problems, trying to stitch, and it gets worse and worse. And a lot of that, I'm pretty sure, could be alleviated with just some good ergonomic practices. And,
agreed. Yeah.
And of course, there's always the taking the break. It's important to do that. Get up, walk around, take a break, because your body needs to not be in the same position for extended periods of time. So
right. Well, and then maybe that's the benefit of my non-ergonomic, way of stitching. So I'm coming around to the idea of either a stand or a lap stand, because my holding the canvas on my scrunched up body on the couch thing is starting to get a little old. But the benefit of it is, because it's such a weird position, I'm wiggling all the time. Like, so I never sit still for very long. So, I've got my knees under me, I've got my knees in front of me, I'm not sitting straight, I'm sitting not straight. So the canvas is always bouncing around. That's part of the problem, but it's also maybe good in a sense, because I'm not sitting in the same position for a very long period of time.
Yeah. Well, I would think so. Yeah. At least variety is the key. Yeah. So,
yeah, but I think some sort of a stand is definitely on the wish list for now.
You'll never go back.
I know.
And that one that Vanna uses, that lap stand she uses, that looks like it's pretty ideal. So
yeah.
She'll write to her, get the contact. Yep. And I don't recall that it was that expensive, but really well built.
Yeah, so. I don't think so. I don't think so. And then, if we can just get that. Here we go.
Yep.
We'll have to figure that out.
You'll never go back. Yep.
There we are. So those are the things I'm learning from my piece, is that efforts put into keeping it clean from the very beginning are worthy, and having some sort of a structure that you're stitching on that's a little bit more structured than just your stretcher bars is perhaps also a good thing.
Yep, I think so.
So that all the things that you guys have been telling me for the past 6 months, you're right. I'll give it in.
Infrastructure.
Infrastructure.
And then there's still the people like Nicole Neville, who stitch in hand, nothing all the time, produce beautiful work. And everybody's different. That's the thing. Everybody's different. Everybody approaches it different. And I think sometimes of Nicole and the freedom she has stitching.
Yes.
Because she doesn't need any infrastructure. She just needs her needle and her project. And wherever she goes, she can stitch. There's a lot of freedom to that. And,
yes.
I don't know. I sure like having mine in a stand.
I'm going to have to work on something. So, and perhaps it'll be, piece dependent too, because smaller pieces are, and I also don't want that inflexibility of not being able to go and stitch wherever I happen to be, because, that happens. You go places. So what I'm finding now is I have my piece to stitch at home, piece to stitch, you know, when I'm at somebody else's house.
Yep. Yep.
Piece to stitch in you know, when traveling. I've discovered that it's really a bad idea to stitch in the car, because then I just get motion sick, which was highly highly disappointing. But planes are not off limits, because then I'm medicated for motion sickness for that. So yeah, so I have like four or five little things going on right now, because they're all for different places. You know, I can, there's my TV stitching piece and my
Yep.
A little ridiculous, but I do want to focus, though. I'm trying to focus on finishing that Diamond Delight piece, because I want to get that done, two framers, and then hopefully, depending on the timing, possibly get it to the local fair, which would be really great. Not for any aspirations of winning anything at all, but just for the experience of having something in a fair, going through the process, and be able to talk about it. And if nothing else, you know, if I do win, just so you know, the hobby needlework of more than one stitch piece category, because there's like 8 billion categories at the local fair, the first prize is $5. So,
oh, there you go.
I'm really amped about that, and hoping that I can do it. But again, because it's my first piece, I'm not very I'm not attached to that outcome. You know, second prize of $2 would be, you know, just as good.
Yeah. Wow.
So.
Wow, that's game-changing stuff right there. Yeah.
It is. It is. It is. That's gonna fund, you know, my next project. So yeah. That's
one,
my strategy.
One skein of silk thread. Thank
yeah,
you.
That's the strategy. Is I'm gonna enter fairs. I'm gonna win them, and then that is gonna fund the next piece, which will then right. See, it's totally.
I think that's a great strategy. Go for it.
Right. I think so. So, no, I think it's just going to be fun to just go through the process of entering and just see what that'll all about. So.
Well, especially if you get a critique. You know, you get a critique and
yes.
Yes,
well, that's,
exactly.
That's the benefit. That's really what I'm going to get out of it is you know, having somebody look at it and say, you know, this is good, this isn't good, this is what you could do differently, and to see what other pieces are there. So, you know, and to see what's different about the pieces that do win, you know, and I think it comes back to what we said at the very beginning. A lot of it has to do with finishing. If you bring a piece that is poorly finished, that draws the eye of the judge so easily, it's hard to overlook, you
yep.
know? So I think that's going to be the key, is really just making sure that the finishing is impeccable so that it doesn't distract from the quality of the piece.
Yep. Well, it'll be interesting. Stitch fast.
Yeah.
Get ready.
I'm trying.
All right, we got to wrap this up. Susan Greening Davis, Sunday. What a conversation.
yes.
Reproductive samplers again, and reproduction samplers.
Thank you for correcting that. I was going to say that was a little different conversation than I remember, but that would also be interesting.
Yeah. It would be quite interesting. We should look for someone who can do reproductive samplers. Yes, see how that works out. I'd be interested in the biology there.
Mm-hmm. Not sure on what that is, but I think you just came up with some new ideas.
Yeah, I'd be interested in the biology. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep. So anyway, Susan, that was really fun talking with Susan. So she's Sunday, samplers, cross-stitching, and I think there were several other things that got into the conversation.
I think so.
Yeah, she was a lot of fun. So that's Sunday. We're done for the middle of the week. Thanks for listening.
Take care.